I usually say when I receive a generous introduction that I can hardly wait to hear what I have to say. I'm grateful for the opportunity. We were snowed in Yerushalayim, and I didn't have a chance to go out of my house for 5 days. There was aside from the snow and the ice, there were a number of major trees that fell and blocked the gate to my house, so that I had no way of getting out even if I wished to. So I've been thinking about this speech for a long time. basic ideas of Judaism, so to speak, are contained in the Torah. Now, the Torah also is a book of laws. It's halacha. It's a book of detail, because halacha basically deals in detail. How many strings are there to tzitzit? What is meant by totafos beineinecha? What does it mean, lo sase kol melacha on Shabbat? What is asher yeochel lechol nefesh mean on Yom Tov? All of these things, the Torah speaks to us in generalities, and the Torah Shebaal Peh is meant to fill in the details. Over the long millennia of the Jewish people, since Sinai till today, the details have been discussed, refined, and because of many reasons, there never has been a complete agreement on the details, so that there are different customs and different halachot that are followed in the Jewish world. And as the Talmud phrases it regarding Beit Shammai or Beit Hillel, Elu ve'elu divrei Elohim chayim, they're both right. Now that's a very different concept to wrap our minds about. You know, people ask, is it kosher or is it not kosher, Rabbi? So the rabbinic answer is, it all depends. Which is basically the rabbinic answer to everything. Even though we search for finality and for clear decision, life does not allow it. And therefore, the basis of halacha is that they're both right, depending on the situation. The famous example that can be used is that if you will research in Yeridaya, questions of basic kashrus, is the chicken kosher or not? So then you will find that, especially the Ramah, but all other poskim also, introduce different values. There's a value called hefsed meruba. The man's a poor man. He's only got, he's going to lose because of it. So then we have to find a leniency for him. The man is a very wealthy man, so we don't have to find any leniency for him. Zelo fair. The rabbi, it's either kosher or not kosher. The answer is that Ze Sefer Toldos Adon. The Torah is the book of humankind. The Torah speaks to people. People are not the same, circumstances are not the same, issues in one generation are not the same as the issues were in different generations, Dor-dor v'dorshov, dor-dor v'chachomov. And therefore, the Torah gives us a wide latitude, so to speak, always within parameters, but a wide latitude how to view matters. So, for instance, something that I always find interesting is that the Ramah says that if you're going to have guests, if there are orchim, and there's a question about the kashrus, let's say, of the chicken or the meat. So our mindset is, you know, my guests only eat badas. So I'm going to have to serve them, leben. But the Ramo's mindset was that if you have orchim, the mukam orchim, we'll search for a leniency. What if your mother-in-law is coming for supper? The Ramo says that we have to search for a leniency. What if it's Erev Shabbat? And the store is closed, and you can't go out to find anything. So we have to search for a leniency. Now, what is that based on? Well, I mean, there has to be a basis for this. But yeah, the Ramah is not frum. They didn't get it, and we get it. And just as an aside, there has never in the history of the Jewish people, in my opinion, and all those who know me know I'm never wrong, there has never in the history of the Jewish people been a level of kashrus as exists today. Not because we are holy, and not because we are more learned, but simply technology has erased. I mean, if you'll learn Hilchas Treifa, which in most of the yeshiva to get smicha today, they don't even study Hilchas Treifa anymore. I remember that I had to know it by heart, and when I had the yeshiva in Muncie, the smicha program, we all studied Hilchas Treifa. But today it's almost non-existent. Why? Because our chickens and our poultry and our animals and our steers and cows are raised in a fashion that most treifas don't exist. You don't see it today. So the level of achievement in manufactured food products is has never reached the level that it is today. Simply because, not because of us, but because of the technology of food today. And it will continue to be that way. When they speak about the genetically altered animals, which is a question of in halacha, but eventually you have genetically altered animals that there can be no question of treifas whatsoever. So it's an amazing thing that we live, the time that we live in. But this concept that I mentioned to you, that if it's Erev Shabbat, you have guests, you're a poor person, it's Behefsed Meruba, it's an emergency situation, we're going to get out of the problem, has to have a basis. What's the basis for it? Or what's the basis? The Gemara says, for instance, Be'aguna Hikilu, that when we have a question of aguna, and that's, I'm not talking about today. Today we call women that don't receive a divorce from their husbands when they should, so we call them an aguna. But that's halachically, that's a misstatement. An aguna is a woman whose husband has disappeared. We don't know what happened to him. So she's an aguna. But she's stuck. Because in such a case, you cannot say she can remarry, because we never saw the body. We don't know what happened to the husband. On the other hand, the husband is not here, so she has no life. And many times she's a young woman, or any woman, and she wants to rebuild her life. Well, what do we do? So there's a famous tshuva of Reb Chaim Volozhiner. Reb Chaim Rabinowitz, the founder of the Rosh Yeshiva of Volozhin, who was a disciple of the Gaon of Vilna. When I say a disciple of the Gaon of Vilna, it doesn't mean that the Gaon of Vilna had a yeshiva and he learned there. He himself writes that twice a year he saved up his questions and he went to visit the Gaon, and the Gaon gave him a half hour. He asked all of his questions and he went home. Then he went again. That was what it was meant to be a disciple. So he writes there, so he was, because of the fact that he had an hour a year from the Gaon, so he was the chief rabbi, quote unquote, of Lithuania. No rabbonim would deal with extremely difficult, complex, halachic issues without consulting him. So we think of him as a Rosh Yeshiva, but there's, in our time, you know, because like in medicine, there are specialists today, and attorneys, there are specialists today, you know. When I was an attorney, everybody practiced whatever went in the door. Everybody was a general practitioner. Most doctors were general practitioners. But today we live in an age of specialization. In the snowstorm, my beautiful Mac computer departed from this world. and so I need it because, you know, I have to write and then meet people. Maybe Obama wants to contact me, so I have to, I have to have it. So I call up my computer guy, and he says, I don't deal with Macs, I only deal with PCs. He's also a specialist, right? So now I got to get a specialist with a Mac to come fix my computer. That's the world of specialization. So the Reb Chaim Volozhiner writes as follows, that there was a case that came before him of a woman whose husband disappeared on the road. Now then, in Eastern Europe, no non-Jew ever went to prison for killing or mugging a Jew. And he disappeared. And it's 3 years since he disappeared. No one heard anything about him. And the woman comes before him, and she's stuck. She's a young woman yet. And she tells him that there was a Jew in her town that was in a certain inn or tavern, and he overheard two non-Jews discussing the fact that they mugged and robbed and killed a Jew on the road. And they described the Jew, and they even described the clothing that he wore. And the description of the Jew and of the clothing matched that of her husband. So Reb Chaim had her bring this Jew to him to testify, and he told him the whole story. Now this is brought in the Chuta Meshulosh, the Shilas and Chuvas of the Chuta Meshulosh, in the section about Reb Chaim Volozhiner, I think in Simon Chof. And anyway, he brings the Jew before him, and the Jew tells him this story. And Reb Chaim Volozhiner puts the elephant through the eye of the needle, because it's non-Jews, it's hearsay testimony, it's one witness, there's no body, And he says she is muteris. She is allowed to get married. The rule in life is that there's always another rabbi. You know that. There's always another rabbi. Yeah, we're living witness to it in our world here. On any issue, there's always another rabbi. So there was another rabbi in Lithuania that wrote to Reb Chaim, and he said, I heard about your psak. I heard about your decision regarding this woman. How could you do such a thing? The Isur of Eishes Ish is the most severe in the Torah. And here, look what you did. I mean, it was abracadabra. It was a magical thing, right? You said this, you looked there. So Reb Chaim writes him back. He quotes it in the Tshuva. He says, when I was young, he said, I also held like you. He says, but what can I do? He said, now there's no rabbi in Lita that will free an aguna without my acquiescence. So it's on my shoulders, not on yours. V'hi omedes lefonai v'lo lefonecha. She is standing in front of me and not in front of you. V'dimaso alechyo. And she is weeping. So then he does something remarkable. He doesn't say, you know, and I found the Rashba that's matir, or I found the Ramban, or we can say that the Ramo would be matir. He says as follows, Chishavti inkoni. I had a discussion with God. How do you like that? Because by us, God doesn't exist, right? The book exists. It's nothing to do with God. My Rebbe in the yeshiva used to tell us always, if you should remember that in back of the Shulchan Aruch is the Rabbeinu Shalom. I never understood what he said until much later in life. He says, Chishavti inkoni. So I had a discussion with God, v'hi tartiho, and I said she's muter. V'hi muteris l'chol odom. And she is muter, and you mind your business. How does he do that? Not yet, he writes it. You know, today, if you want to be matir something, you make sure that it's not recorded and that no one knows about it so that you can deny it later. But he said she's mutter, and he writes it. So from this, we have a insight, in my opinion, into how the Torah works. The Torah is not only laws, it's a value system. And whatever exists has to fit into the value system. If it doesn't fit into the value system, it's not Torah. Something else. So to speak, the Torah is not only the black letters, it's the white spaces also. And the greatness of Poskim, the greatness of Talmidei Chachamim, the greatness of the process of Halacha over all of the centuries has been the ability to somehow read the white spaces in order to understand the black letters. So I'll give you an example. We recited the Pasuk in Mishlei, Yocheo Darchei Noam, V'chol Nesiv Oseho Shalom. Many congregations it's put to melody. Wonderful, right? It's a nice thing, you know. Yocheo Darchei Noam, the ways of the Torah are pleasantness. All of its paths lead to peace. Yeah, everybody likes that, right? But to say that that is somehow a practical rule to apply, we would never do so. Except the Gemara does it all the time. For instance, there is in the Jordan Valley, there are palm trees that produce exquisite lulavim. Tall, green, perfect. But the Gemara in Sukkah says that we shall not use those lulavim for the mitzvah of Arba Amini. Why? Because the lulav has thorns. And someone can prick themselves in obtaining the lulav. And the Gemara says that's a violation of the value of Drachea Darchei Noam. If the Torah is a Drachea Darchei Noam, if it's the ways of pleasantness, then it cannot be that a person should hold the lulav and it be pricked by a thorn. It cannot be that that's what the mitzvah was. Because God, so to speak, is bound by his own rules, by his own values. And that's Drachea Darchei Noam. The Gemara in Yevamos says, at a time when Yibum, when levirate marriage was yet performed amongst the Jewish people, we don't have Yibum today, we have only Chalitza. In the Sephardic world, till our time almost, they still had Yibum. So the Gemara says, an old man should not be miyabim a young woman. And an old woman should not be subject to yibum by a young brother. Why? Because it's not yocher darchei noam. In Yiddish we used to say, it's pastnit. It's not the way it's supposed to be. And the Torah is the way it's supposed to be. And therefore, if it's not Drachea Darchei Noam, then cannot be that that's what the Torah wanted. That's the value. So there's a famous piece in the Meshech Chochma from Meir Simcha, that one of the most seminal minds in the Jewish world in the last century, in his great Perish to Chumash. So in Parshas Noach, we have the Ribbono Shalom gave the tzivui, the commandment of pruervu, to have children, to populate the world. Now, we all know that children are a pain. They're annoying, they're expensive, they don't listen. And the only measure of revenge is that the Lord makes them parents. So the natural instinct would be not to have children, as many people in the modern Western world today decide. You know, Mali Litzorozu, what I have to bother with the whole thing? So we have a mitzvah, pruervu. So the Meshech Chochma says, it's interesting that the Gemara says that mitzvah only applies to men, not to women. So the question arises, I mean, who are they kidding? Until now, we still need women. I mean, we're working on it, but until now we still need women. So then what does the Gemara mean that the mitzvah is on men and the mitzvah is not, the women are not mitzvah, women are not commanded to have children? So he says a remarkable thing. He says, we have a concept called Drachea Darchei Noam. It's a value. Value that exists, governs all of Torah. Governs what? That's why we have an Isser of Lashon Hara. That's why we have an Isser of Lo Sigzo. That's why we have an Isser of Lo Sirtzach. it because all of those things violate Rochea Darchei Noah. It's not that they are freestanding halachas. Lo Sachmod, which we have such difficulty interpreting, and which the Gemara says in Bava Kamma that it only ends up being part of Lo Sigzo, but the concept of Lo Sachmod is because it's not Rochea Darchei Noah. Not nice. And the people come into your house and they say, oh, you know, what'd you pay for those drapes? That's not Jochea Darchei Noah. None of your business. But, you know, people are people. And the Torah wanted to make people better people. So the Meshech Chochma says, the Torah would not command a human being to undergo 9 months of discomfort, the pain of childbirth, the risk of mortality. The Torah could not make that a mitzvah. Could not command someone to do it. The Rabboni Shalom gave women a maternal instinct that they want to have children. So that's how the world continues. But he says that the Torah should command that, he said, it would not be Drachea Darchei Noam. And if it's not Drachea Darchei Noam, it's not the Torah. It can be other things, but it is not the Torah. So if we understand this concept, that there is a value that governs things, and that that value governs the halakha as well, so we can understand why Reb Chaim Volozhiner tried to be Matir the Aguna, because that's Drachea Darchei Noam. We can understand why the Ramah said if it's Erev Shabbat, you can eat the chicken, because that's Drachea Darchei Noam. We can understand why the Gemara says Kolach Teira Odif. If you have a dispute whether something is Osir or Mutter, the one Rashi points out, the one that says it's Mutter should be followed because he has the more difficult position to prove. Anybody can call up the Rav and the Rav will say, don't do it. That's the easiest answer in the rabbinate. I'm a rabbi a long time, Baruch Hashem. The easiest answer is no good, right? You can't go wrong. But if a rabbi has to say, you are allowed, go ahead and do it. So he has to have a basis for it. And therefore the Gemara says, Koach the Heter Odif. The Koach of the Heter is stronger. Simply because of the fact that we have this basic principle of Drochea Darchei Noam. That's the whole thing in domestic relations too. Rav Yaakov Golubs used to say, I remember, he used to say, Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, Chatzal Gavrocha, was the cleverest of Jews. He used to say, it's not enough to love your wife, you gotta like her as well. Which is more difficult, I want to tell you. But that's Drachea Darchei Noam, right? That's what we call Hakoras HaTov. To be grateful. The Gemara says on Rabbi Yossi Aglili, Rabbi Yossi Aglili had a Rebbetzin from Rebbetzin land. She would interrupt him in the middle of the shir. She would berate him in front of others. So the Gemara says that the Talmidim, his students, once said to him, well, why don't you divorce her? And he answered, he said, divorce her? He said, lo dai, it's not enough. He says that she raises my children and she takes care of my physical needs and she gives me to eat. I should divorce her? Now, that doesn't fly in today's world at all. But that's dracher darchei nolam. That's simply appreciation. The Medrash says in the parashas that we're reading, you know, Moshe Rabbeinu doesn't smite the Nile River. Why? Because of the fact that it was instrumental in his being saved as an infant. Well, I mean, what? The Nile River knows that it's got something to do with Moshe. But Moshe knows that it's got something to do with him. So he has to show appreciation. He cannot smite the sands and the earth because it covered up the Egyptian that he killed. So again, the sand and the earth, it knows what are you talking about? But Moshe knows. So we have to show appreciation to inanimate objects also. And therefore we have a law in the Torah of Baltashkis. Don't destroy things unnecessarily. What's the difference? In today's world, everything is replaceable. Even body parts. So what's the difference if I destroy it or I don't destroy it? The answer is, it's not your cheodar chinoa. That's not how you treat things. Not how you treat clothing. The Gemara says that David HaMelech, when he became old, it says, HaMelech David zokein bo ba'yomim v'yechasu ba'bgodim, they covered him with clothing v'lo yecham lo, and he never got warm. He was always cold. And the Gemara says, how come? The Gemara says, because he was disrespectful of clothing. He cut the garment of Shaul. He was always disrespectful of clothing. When he's disrespectful of clothing, clothing is not going to make him warm. I mean, this sweater knows whether or not the person is disrespectful of clothing or not. But that's the power of Drachei Adar Chinoam. You're not disrespectful of anything. And if one is, so then the Lord has many ways to repay. Because everything in life is exquisite. It's perfect. Nothing happens at random. I remember that once I drove her, Bianca, we were going to a wedding in New York, and we were driving from Muncie, so you have to cross the George Washington Bridge, which is one of the more pleasant experiences in the metropolitan area. And there was a backup, 30 minutes to get to the toll booth to pay the exorbitant price for crossing the bridge. And it was a hot day, and the car's air conditioning wasn't working that well, and we were late for the wedding, and I'm so finally I pull up to the booth and I give the attendant a $20 bill, and he gives me change, and I zoom out to get on the bridge, and Rabbi Yaakov bends over and says to me, Rabbi Vine, you forgot to say thank you. You're supposed to say thank you. He gave you change. It's hot for him too. That's drachei adarchei noam, to say thank you. If you don't say thank you, it's not drachei adarchei noam. It's not what the Torah wanted. He heard this speech before. So we have here a governing value. Shalom. So we know the famous story. Three Arabs come into the house of Avraham and Sarah. She doesn't see them as angels. Avraham doesn't see them as angels. Avraham says they have to wash their feet. And he gives them to eat. The angels don't have to eat. And one of them says to her, says to Avraham, where's Sarah Yishtecha? Where's Sarah? I got a message for her. Sarah's 90 years old. And she's not so happy that they got all these guests in the house all of a sudden. As the Medrash says, Rashi says it. And this Arab tells her, listen, Sora, you know, you're going to become pregnant. And next year, Koes Chayol, Sora Bain, you're going to have a child. And she says to herself, Achrei Blosi Hoysoli Edna. After I'm old and withered, all of a sudden I'm going to come young and fresh again. And then she says two fateful words. And she says, even if it happens to me, V'adoni Zokain, he's an old man. And she laughs. The Lord appears to Avraham and says to him, Lomozet sochako sora lemor af aniele. Why did Sora laugh? Is anything too wondrous for God to do? So the Gemara points out that God, so to speak, didn't tell him the whole story. God did not say, and she said, you're an old man. Because Avraham would have felt badly about that. It would have hurt him. So the Lord, so to speak, tailors the message not to hurt Avraham. Because that's kol nesivoseh shalom. That's Jocher Darchinon. So to speak, Haviyochel, the Rabboni Shalom, is also bound by his rules. That's what it means that the Torah, right, came with the creation of the world. And that's what it means there, Eretz Kodmo, the Torah. That there's a system that holds it in place, just like there's a gravitational system that holds our galaxy in place. And that system is dependent upon the white spaces, not just the black letters. So we live in a time, you know, and the Jewish people been traumatized. I remember after the Yom Kippur War, I came to Israel then. I was the head of the OU Kashrus then. I came to the Israeli army, ran out of rations, and we had to... It's a long story, but the basic ration of the Israeli army that they needed were sardines, because it could be... cans of sardines could be easily carried, easily opened. And they gave you instant protein. So they needed sardines, 3 million cans of sardines. And they ordered it from King Oscar in Stavanger, Norway. But the Norwegians then were like the Norwegians now. So they said... we'll fill the order, we'll take your money, but no Israeli rabbi can come to supervise the production. As though boycott started today, right? Only today, all of a sudden. So the Rabbanut, I remember, they called me up and they said, you go for us, right? You're an American rabbi. You're the OU. They want to have the OU certification anyway. I went to Stavanger. I get up 3 in the morning. You see millions of sardines. It's a whole experience. But just as an aside, so that you'll have something of benefit from this lecture, every sardine is hung individually on a hook. Every one. And it's graded. Sug Aleph, Sug Bet, Sug Gimel, right? And they're all packed by hand. It's a remarkable thing to see. Anyway, so I came to Israel afterwards to report, that the sardines are on the way and everything is fine. But the mood in Israel after the Yom Kippur War was absolutely depressing. Ein Bayis Asher Ein Shomeis, there were 2,700 soldiers killed. There were 10,000 wounded, some of them permanently maimed. And the entire state just escaped by hair's breadth from being destroyed. The Syrian tanks had a clear road to Haifa. They couldn't believe it, so they stopped. So it was all min hashamayim, the whole thing. So I went to see a great Jew here. And I asked him what was his assessment of the matzav. So he said to me a very wise thing that I remember until today, and I think it's still true today because I still think we're traumatized. He said, the entire Jewish people, he said, the entire state of Israel is in the hospital. He said, some people are in intensive care. Some people are in the cardiac section. Some people are in the psychiatric section. Some people are outpatients. But everybody's in the hospital. He said, what's the first rule in a hospital? Shekhet, quiet. He says, does the doctor come in the morning and say to the patient, why aren't you better today? Certainly not. So he said, I don't understand what everybody is hollering about. What's all the shouting? We're all in a hospital. And I don't think that much has changed in the 40 years since the war. And therefore, the question still arises, what are we shouting about? We should try, everyone should try to make everyone get well and feel better. But you don't do it by shouting. You don't do it by all sorts of really unacceptable behavior. Because that never worked, that it will never work. Simply because we ignore our history, that we think that somehow that will help. And we live in a time when we need inspiration. So I came from a generation that somehow provided us inspiration. I saw the last of the great European Rashi Yeshiva, and the Litvisha Gdolim, my Rabbeim in the Yeshiva. So without demeaning Chas V'Sholem anything, we have great, great, great accomplishments in Torah and in Torah education in our time. But that is gone. What was then is no longer. So we read in the Novi Yecheskel that he sees a valley full of dry bones, right? Haftorah for Chol HaMoed Shabbos Pesach. He sees this valley full of dry bones. The Gemara says that the dry bones were from the Shevet of Ephraim that left Mitzrayim prematurely. However, we'll understand that. Anyway, and in this dream, in his vision of the valley of dry bones, the Lord says to him, "Hasichyenu ha'atzomos ha'ele? Can these bones be revived?" And the Novi answers, "Aho Hashem Elokim ato yodea. Lord God, Yoni, you know. I don't know. How can I revive the dead bones?" And the voice tells him, "Ben Odom, you, Novi Yechezkel, you prophesy, you speak to the bones, and tell them to come together, stand up again, be revived." And then the Novi describes how the bones start to form skeletons, and how the skeletons then begin to be covered with muscles and sinew, and skin, and then they arise, a great wind comes and infuses them with life. Koho godol ma'od, a great and mighty throng. That's the vision of the Navi. So the Gemara asks, because the Gemara was interested in Tanakh. It had a value to them. So the Gemara asks, well, then what happened to that? Got 30,000 people stand up from the dead. Hey, Fohei, where are they? So the Gemara says an opinion. Omdu al raglayim, they stood up on their feet. Omru shira, they said halel, they said praise of God. Umesu, and they all dropped dead again. Omer Rabbi Elozer, chas v'sholem to say that. He said they all stood up. They got married, they had children, they had families, they built a new life for themselves. And then the Gemara says, Omad Rabbi Yehuda ben Pseira al Raglov, Rabbi Yehuda ben Pseira stood on his feet, and he said, Ani mi b'nei b'neiem, I am descended from them. And the proof of the matter is tefillin shel avi abo biyodi. I have my Zeta's tefillin in my hand. So what do we do with this Gemara? One Bandi Omar says that what? That they all drop dead again? And here Rabbi Yehuda ben Pseira says, I got their tefillin. This, by the way, is the origin of the custom that grandfathers purchase tefillin for their grandsons at their bar mitzvah. People want to know, what can they leave to later generations? Tefillin. The rest of it is not going to help. You can never leave enough. So you might as well spend it all, which is my policy. So how do we reconcile? So I thought that that's literally our time. The Lord here is talking to us. We were all a valley of dead bones. I remember 1945 and 1946, 47. I remember when the survivors limped into Chicago. I remember that everybody had family that was destroyed in the Holocaust. I remember when Rabbi Oshri came to tell my father how his brother and his wife and children were killed by the Bolsheviks in 1940 when the Soviet Union invaded Lithuania. The Jewish people were on the floor. We were all dead bones. And here in Eretz Yisrael, there was the British. The immigration was blocked. The Arabs were rioting, you know, people, oh, you know, intifada, like it happened today, right? It's going on for 100 years. You know, but we don't have to worry because John Kerry is going to settle it. And how is the Yishuv going to be able to survive? So what happened was that somehow we did survive. And not only survive, we were triumphant. We built a state. And we rebuilt Torah. Created an economy. Unbelievable. So a lot of Jews, Omdu al Argleim, Omru Shira, they stood on their feet and they said, great, wonderful, right? Vamesu, and then they all dropped dead again. They intermarried, they alienated, they became anti-Israel, they became progressive, they all dropped dead again. But there were those that didn't drop dead. There were those that married and had children and raised families and kept the tefillin of their Zayda in their hand. And that's the choice that we have. Always the choice. God always gives us options. So what do we do with the opportunity that's given to us? And that is really what our chinuch, our education should be. That really is the message we should give to our children and grandchildren. I phrase it in one more story before Mincha. When in 1946, Rav Herzog, Zecher Tzadik Levracha, who was then the chief rabbi of Israel, of Palestine then, so he visited Chicago. And I remember my father, blessed memory, he woke me up in the morning. I was way before Bar Mitzvah yet. He woke me up in the morning and we went to the airport. The first time in my life I ever went to an airport. First time in my life I ever saw a plane up close. And he came down the stair. And then you could go out on the tarmac right to the plane. And with his great top hat and the silver rabbinic cane, and he had a Tanakh in his other hand, magnificently aristocratic person. And then we all went to the yeshiva, and he said a shir in the yeshiva. I remember even he said, I'm shliach l'dvar aveira, the teshuvah and bav metzia. Yiddish. Then when he finished the shir, he spoke English. He spoke a perfect English, but with an Irish brogue, because he was the chief rabbi in Dublin before he became the Rav in Jerusalem. And I remember it was pretty incongruous that out of his great beard, a white beard, was coming Paddy McGillicuddy, but he spoke to us. And he looked around the room and he said, I want you to know, he said, I just came from the Pope of Rome. I had an audience that was Pius the 12th then. I had an audience with the Pope of Rome, and I gave him a list with 10,000 names of Jewish children who were sequestered in Catholic institutions during the Second World War to save them from the Germans. And I asked him to give back the children. And the Pope said no, he would not do so. He could not do so, because he said every one of these children was immediately baptized upon entering the Catholic institution, and anyone who was baptized in the Catholic faith could not be given to be raised in a different faith. When he said that, he put his head down on the ständer, on the lectern, and he wept. The whole 2,000 years poured out of him. I had never seen a grown man weep that way. And then he raised himself. He looked around the room at us. There were about 200, 220 Bachrim. The Chicago Yeshiva was then the only yeshiva in the Midwest except for Telge and Cleveland. And so the whole Midwest was there. Out of the whole half a million Jews, there were 220 in the yeshiva from 11 years old to 25 years old. And he looked at us and he said, listen, he said, I cannot do anything more for those 10,000 children. He said, but what are you going to do for the Jewish people? How are you going to rebuild it? And later, when we all walked by him to shake his hand and receive a blessing, he said to each and every one of us, I remember, he said, did you hear what I said? Remember what I said. So as I told you before, I've been a Rav a long, long time. It's very hard people, the Jewish people. I once I was good friends with the Reform Rabbi in Miami Beach, who had his temple across the street from my shul, and I once told him, I envy you. He said, you envy me? Why? I said, because all of your balabatim are goyim. And I got Jews to contend with. So there are many times when, you know, and I was depressed, I was frustrated, it was just awful. And I always heard Rabbi Herzog in my ears, what are you going to do? How are you going to rebuild the Jewish people? That should be taught. If I say a piece of heresy, that should be taught even more, perhaps, than the Tesis in Bava Metzia. Because if that exists, then everything exists. That's what Hillel said, Imanika Nakolka, and everything is here. But if that is not present within us, then a lot of people are going to stand up and drop dead again. So that is our challenge and our time and our value system. And we should remain strong and true to it and not be afraid to express it and certainly not be afraid to live by it. And the Ribbono Shel'olam will bless us with goodness and happiness, nachas in our families, and will bless the Jewish people and the state of Israel. Hashem Oz Lamo Yitain, Hashem Yivarech Es Amo V'Shalom. Thank you.